I'm Finn J.D. John, bringing you another daily episode of the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast, which every weekday brings you another story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History syndicated newspaper column. Full details are at offbeatoregon.com. Check it out. But first, sit back and relax and let me tell you the story of the family that camped unnoticed in downtown Portland for four straight years, and why there's 5,000 acres of near wilderness at the heart of Portland, Oregon's largest city. This story was first published on October 25th, 2010, under the headline, Family Camped Unnoticed in Downtown Portland for 4 Years. Here we go. The two cross-country runners running through a trailless part of the city park that was supposed to be off-limits were breaking the law. But then so were Frank and Ruth, the father and daughter that the runners found camping there. Frank and Ruth, police never released their last name, had been living in the park for 4 years, and in that entire time the runners were the only people to find them. What's really unusual about this story is it took place in downtown Portland. Portland is probably the only city in which you can get lost in the woods badly enough to get in real trouble without ever leaving city limits. Several other cities can point to larger urban parks, but good old Stumptown is the only one that has so much wild acreage so close to the center of the city. It's called Forest Park, and it's a 5,000-acre finger of thickly wooded land stretching into Portland from the northwest along the Willamette River. Forest Park's roots go back to 1903, when John Charles Olmsted came to town to help Portland with its parks plan. Olmsted, one of the brothers who designed New York City's Central Park, urged the city to set aside a huge piece of land right smack in the middle, the very piece, in fact, that later became Forest Park. But the city had no money to buy the land, and private developers were already carving it up. And over the next few decades, these developers gave the piece their best shot. But it was almost as if Forest Park were predestined by a higher power, as if the efforts of mere puny mortals to turn it into subdivisions were fetching up against a bulwark of divine wrath. Roads would be built, lots would be sold, and then just as people were getting ready to start swinging hammers, the rains would come. And with them the mudslides, which would wash out the roads. The city would fix the roads at great expense and send the bill to the lot owners. This happened at least 2 times. By the mid-1940s, the owners of the lots had all given up, every single one of them, and quit paying the city's assessments for road upkeep. Their lots were forfeited to the city, and for years the city just sat on the land. During the Depression, it set up woodcutting camps there to keep people employed. Hopeful citizens, eager to stake out mining claims on the now publicly owned property, drilled oil wells in the hopes of hitting something that would enable them to grab a piece of it, with no luck. Finally, in 1945, the City Club of Portland took up cudgels to make the land a park. Members had found Olmsted's recommendation in the original parks plan and thought it was a great idea. After all, the city now owned the whole thing anyway. So 3 years later, on September 25th, 1948, a group of people gathered at the site of one of the dry oil wells for the official dedication of Portland's newest and America's largest downtown city park. Not that it was much to look at. Most of it was clear-cut, and much of it was very ugly. But the years have been kind to it, and generations of volunteers have worked to replant and restore it. Today it's thickly forested, and huge swaths of it haven't known a human footstep in decades. As for Frank and Ruth, the father and daughter who were found camping there, well, they came to Portland in 2000. Frank, jobless and broke and living on a $400 a month veteran's disability benefit, decided that rather than raise his third grader on the streets, he'd set up housekeeping deep in Forest Park. And so he did, and there they lived for 4 full years, while he homeschooled her with a set of encyclopedias and a Bible. He apparently knew what he was doing. When they were found, she was of the right age to be in the 7th grade, but tested at the 12th grade level. After the story hit the news, reporters and cameras crews got very interested in them. Uncomfortable with the attention, Frank and Ruth disappeared again, this time into the Coast Range Mountains west of Portland, and today their whereabouts are unknown. That's it for today's episode. If you're listening for the first time and want more information about Offbeat Oregon, you can get everything at our central website at offbeatoregon.com. About 175 columns going back to 2008 when I first started doing these, plus links to audio and text feeds on RSS and iTunes, and the Facebook page and the Twitter feed. There's even a link to the Amazon page for my book, Wicked Portland, The Wild and Lusty Underworld of a Frontier Seaport Town, which came out earlier this month, and which you should totally check out if you haven't yet. The website's also where you'll find full citations of sources for this story. Sources include Steve Amon and Vince Patton, Marcy C. Hooley, and Joseph Rose. All these columns are covered under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license. Details are at offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is a track titled Old Man's Waltz by the Atlas String Band, written by Carmen Ficarra. Coming to Corvallis? Drop me a line. Let's grab a cup of coffee. I love geeking out with fellow history buffs. I'm at Finn at offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, at offbeatoregon. That's it for today, so thanks for listening, and have a great day.